Welcome.
The need for change. Shield of Sisters believes that we are duty-bound to help sister service members overcome the weight of military sexual trauma. It's time to end sexual assault in our armed services. When you decided to join the military, you raised your right hand and vowed to protect and defend. Never in your wildest dreams did you think you would need to be protected from those brothers and sisters in uniform who took the same oath as you. The statistics are concerning, and the call for change has to be so loud that it can be heard, not ignored, by those in charge of our armed services. The Pentagon releases statistics annually to show the increase in the number of assaults across the branches of service. In 2022, over 36,000 lady service members reported some form of sexual assault. These are the cases that were actually reported. The number may be very different when considering many did not report their sexual assault. Many refuse to report because they fear retaliation. While military officials continue to scramble to find solutions, we know one thing. There is a path to restoration after an assault. There is still dignity in your service, and there are resources available to help you get through your experience. Our battle cry will be heard. We will make an impact, and we are committed to helping you find yourself again. If you are looking for immediate resources, please contact your command, your local VA, or military crisis line. When I decided to create Shield of Sisters, I was broken. I had dealt with my trauma for over 30 years. Some would say that I had no issues. I have been fairly successful in my life. I was surviving, but I wanted to thrive. I was tired of letting my past dictate my present and future. I contacted various people to see what we could do to change not only my path, but the paths of my sisters. The restoration retreat created a new way of thinking for me. You may ask, how can 2.5 days change years of pain? It does. I went into the retreat a bit skeptical and came out 2.5 days later, ready to share this breakthrough with my fellow sisters who have survived MST. You're not in this alone. Shannon.
Welcome.
Go to college. So I joined the military, much to his shock, and did 5.5 years. And then I've spent the past 25 years as a military spouse and mom. My name is Shannon Huff. I'm from Fort Knox, Kentucky. I joined the Navy in 1992. I was a cryptologic technician communications operator. I joined because I didn't want to go to college right out of high school. And my dad said either join the military or
You are a military brat.
Mm-hmm.
You served yourself. Mm-hmm. You married a service member and a kid or two of yours joined the service as well. So you're a military mom.
Yep.
Like
I'm one of those legacy people.
That is a legacy because that, I mean, that usually somebody can claim one of those, maybe two.
Mm-hmm.
But you've got like every aspect. So what was it like being a military brat moving around? I grew up and lived in one place and didn't have to move everywhere. What was that like for you as a kid?
We only moved around, I think, the first 3 or 4 years because my mom divorced my dad. And then I think we lived in Fort Benning, Georgia, somewhere in Arkansas, and then went back to Kentucky and spent in Fort Knox. So I was pretty stable up until I was 18. And I haven't lived anywhere in one place more than 3 or 4 years since, except for now, because, you know, we're retired. So, but, you know, it molds you. You learn a lot as a military brat on just discipline and knowing how to behave yourself and how to carry that throughout the rest of your life, I think. So I think, you know, military kids are so resilient, and it definitely has helped me throughout my life.
So with as far as your service, did you join the service before or after you got married, or did you get married while you were in? How did that work?
I joined first. I got married after A school. We were married 5 years, got a divorce, went back home to Kentucky and married someone else, both service members.
Wow, I didn't mean to open up that can of worms.
It's okay. You know, everybody has to have a starter marriage.
Go ahead.
We've been married happily 25 years, and we're just a great team. So it really works. You have to be a great team to be a military family. So,
yeah. Well, that's awesome. And, you know, that could almost be a whole nother conversation, because I do think there's a lot of marriages in the military that do not work out. Mm-hmm. I mean, not that it doesn't happen in the civilian world, but I think being married in a military environment, especially when both people are service members, I think that's a pretty big, significant, like here's your flag of,
yeah,
it could not go well.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not trying to make light of it. I mean, it is a real thing, because I mean, I was never married, but I saw a lot of marriages not pan out to be what mm-hmm. it could have been. And it makes me wonder, would it have been different if they were not military?
I don't know. You know, you're apart so much that you either appreciate the time you have when you're together more than apart, you really see that you're not compatible. So it can go either way. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad, you know, but years apart, especially, you know, throughout the war, there's just so many military couples that it just didn't work. But, you know, you either fight for it or flight. And unfortunately, most of them end up with flight. So,
yeah. Well, that stinks that it didn't work out for you. Wow. That's, yeah. Insert foot into mouth. I mean, I hate to hear that the first marriage didn't work out, but I am glad to hear that you are happily married for 25 years. I mean, mm-hmm. that's a long time.
It is.
Uh-oh.
Half of my life.
Secrets here on a successful marriage. Here's how we made it work. So you did, you had your time in service. And then did you notice a difference from being a service member versus now being married to being a military spouse? Did you see that, like, the difference in the dynamic of the role?
Oh, absolutely. You know, when you're a service member, you have a rank, you have responsibilities, you have a different, you wear the uniform. And when you become the spouse, you don't wear that uniform. You don't have rank, although some of us don't understand that. But you're still serving in a different way. You know, I really think military spouses can be either a force multiplier or they can be a force problem. And, you know, being a force multiplier only gives your spouse the ability to do their job and wear their uniform. And I think understanding both sides is very helpful, because I've been the service member and I've been the spouse. And so I understood all the pressures that were on him. And so that really, I think that made me a better military spouse than some. Maybe not. I don't know.
I was waiting for an adjective of, like, some other spouses. Now, also, being the mother of a service member, what's that like?
Or
do we need to step back and get into your story a little bit more before you can answer that one?
No, it's excruciating to be a military parent, you know, especially mom, because you know what they're going to go through. My husband, I can replace a spouse. I can't have any more kids. And he's like, geez, thanks. And I'm like, no, think about it. I can always get married again if I want. I can't have any more kids. So if something were to happen to my kids and they didn't come home, that's a huge loss. Now, mind you, if I lost my husband, I would be devastated. Let's not get that wrong.
Right.
But it's very different when that's your child, you know, your flesh and blood. And you either, you understand what they're going through. Like from boot camp, the first time she joined the Marine Corps, and I hear the drill just grounding on her. And I'm like, are you okay? And the drill said, don't you answer that. And I hung up the phone and I started crying. I was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I got her in trouble, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it's very different being the parent than the service member or the spouse. So
yeah,
it's definitely, you know, every role I've played in, though, I truly believe we all serve our country in different ways, either as the brat, I don't think that's very politically correct anymore, as the military child,
wow,
as the veteran, you know, as the military parent, but they all play a specific role in order to be that force multiplier that we need.
Yeah. Man, really, you just like had to do a bombshell on that. Like, everything has to be politically correct, you know? I mean, and I know you're just, you know, this is just us, right? And whoever listens to it, but like, that is unfortunate. I mean, when you say military brat, everybody knows you're not calling the person a brat.
Yeah.
And that you're not, but it just, gosh, that's why I just love politics.
And I'm like the worst politically correct person. And now that you know my resume, you probably think that's funny, but I'm not very good at it. But it's your podcast, so I thought I'd be nice.
Darn it. Nice people. But, you know, so, all right. You brought it up. So since I brought it up, I'm going to say something. So it's your fault. Don't get mad. People can look at your resume too. so for the people who are listening, usually when I do a podcast, I will, and this is kind of a good like thing for this episode anyway, generally when I ask somebody about being on the podcast, I've read up on the person. I like what I see. I connect with them and then say, hey, you know, let's talk about you being on the podcast. But this relationship actually ended up being starting off. And it is just starting off, but in a different manner. You've probably heard Cheryl Mason was on this podcast twice, once where she shared her story. And then, September is Suicide Awareness Month, and she shared about her experience as it relates to suicide and having two members of her family die by way of suicide. And so she shared that in a book that she has written that's going to be coming out at some pretty soon here in 2024. But at some point in time after we had published her episode, her second episode, she said, hey, I want to put you in contact with this person. I'm going to connect y'all on LinkedIn and share y'all's phone numbers. And she didn't say anything else. So I had no idea what kind of connection this relationship was going to be, but you know, it, Cheryl Mason, I trusted her enough to know that if she's going to recommend somebody for me to connect to, I better do it. And I did. Well, wow. I love your facial expression. Yeah. But I mean, she's one of those, I think she's one of those people that is a very good networker. And mm-hmm. So if she says, hey, I think you should connect with this person, there's probably something there. So we connected.
Amazing.
She is amazing. She's one of those people I will talk up until I can't talk anymore. Because I mean, I just think she's great. I love it when you have people like her who like are passionate about things and has a heart for people and helping people. And oh, by the way, happens to be accomplished as well. Here enters Shannon. Speaking of which, takes one to know one, then they know each other. So So Shannon, it wasn't until Shannon and I talked on the phone or had a Zoom conversation, and I was like, awesome, so let's record. We set a date and time to record, and then I start reading about her. Dear God, let me tell you about this woman. No, I can't tell you all about her because, like, you probably need to hear from her more than me. But you know what I found out about this woman? Okay, I already knew. She's the president and founder of Shield of Sisters, and that's an amazing organization that she will talk about in a bit. But did you know? Of course you didn't, because I didn't. She was the mayor. Don't even know the name of the town. I read it, but she was a mayor. Now, like, I know she did a lot of stuff advocating for military women and things with Congress, but I didn't know there was also a mayorship that was existed too.
Mayorship.
I know I'm making words up, like, however you call it. She was a mayor. How about
There you
that?
go.
So, like, what's up with that? Like, what prompted you to even do that? Who does that kind of stuff?
So it kind of started after I got my bachelor's degree from University of South Carolina.
Woohoo!
We moved to Hawaii. We got stationed out there, and I started working at the state Senate as a legislative analyst. And after that, we moved to Hawaii, or sorry, California, and I ran for office there. You didn't catch that one, did you? Ran for office there and won, and became the mayor of a town in California. And then after our time in California, we moved to Wisconsin, and I became a mayor of that town as well. So I've actually been a mayor twice
Oh, she's pulling,
of
she's
two
not
different cities.
pulling out those punches.
I guess it just kind of, there's a little bit of political backstory in my family. I've always been interested in it, and it just kind of happened, just right place, right to tell, and right motives, it's not for the weak. It's a hard job because it's thankless. There's not a lot of money in it. I don't know anyone who goes into politics for money. But it's also very rewarding, and it just kind of happened. I can't really like pinpoint a certain thing that happened. It just did, and I love it. I would never run again, but I love, the whole political. Yeah.
Oh, dang it, no wonder. Did you know that the Medal of Honor podcast offers you, the listener, an interactive experience? It does. If you listen to this podcast on Spotify, you will have the opportunity to answer questions after listening to the episode. There are some episodes that will have a question on it. Other episodes may have a poll. Either way, it gives you an opportunity to engage with other listeners, with me as the host, as well as with the guest on that particular episode. So remember, at the end of this episode, go check out the question and the poll because this episode has both. You are a military brat. You served yourself. You married a service member, and a kid or two of yours joined the service as well. So you're a military mom. Like,
I'm one of those legacy people.
that is a legacy because that,
Yeah.
I mean, that usually somebody can claim one of those, maybe two, but you've got like every aspect. So, what was it like being a military brat moving around? For me, I grew up and lived in one place and didn't have to move everywhere. What was that like for you as a kid?
We only moved around, I think, the first 3 or 4 years because my mom divorced my dad. And then I think we lived in Fort Benning, Georgia, somewhere in Arkansas, and then went back to Kentucky and spent in Fort Knox. So I was pretty stable up until I was 18 and I haven't lived anywhere in one place more than 3 or 4 years since, except for now, because, we're retired. So, but it molds you. You learn a lot as a military brat on just discipline and knowing how to behave yourself and how to carry that throughout the rest of your life, I think. So I think, military kids are so resilient, and it definitely has helped me throughout my life.
Or mar so with as far as your service, did you join the service before or after you got married, or did you get married while you were in? How did that work?
I joined first. I got married after A school. We were married 5 years, got a divorce, went back home to Kentucky, and married someone else, both service members.
Wow, I didn't mean to open up that can of worms.
It's okay. Everybody has to have a starter marriage.
Go
We've
ahead.
been married happily 25 years, and we're just a great team. So it really works. You have to be a great team to be a military f family. So.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. And that could almost be a whole nother conversation, because I do think there's a lot of marriages in the military that do not work out. I mean, not that it doesn't happen in the civilian world, but I think being married in a military environment, especially when both people are service members, I think that's a pretty big, significant, like here's your flag of it could not go well. I'm not trying to make light of it. I mean, it is a real thing, because I was never married, but I saw a lot of marriages not pan out to be what it could have been. And it makes me wonder, would it have been different if they were not military?
I don't know. You're apart so much that you either appreciate the time you when you're together more than apart, you really see that you're not compatible. So it can go either way. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad, but years apart, especially, throughout the war, there's just so many military couples that it just didn't work. But you either fight for it or flight, and unfortunately most of them end up with flight, so.
Yeah. Well, that stinks that it didn't work out for you. Wow, that's see, insert foot into mouth. I mean,
No, that's
I
good.
hate to hear that the first marriage didn't work out, but I am glad to hear that you are happily married for 25 years. I mean, that's a long time.
It is. Half of
Uh-oh.
my life.
Secrets here on a successful marriage. Here's how we made it work. So you did you had your time in service, and then did you notice a difference from being a service member versus now being a military spouse? Did you see that, like, the difference in the dynamic of the role?
Oh, absolutely. When you're a service member, you have a rank, you have responsibilities, you have a different, you wear the uniform. And when you become the spouse, you don't wear that uniform. You don't have rank, although some of us don't understand that. But you're still serving in a different way. I really think military spouses can be either a force multiplier or they can be a force problem. And being a force multiplier only gives your spouse the ability to do their job and wear their uniform. And I think understanding both sides is very helpful, because I've been the service member and I've been the spouse, and so I understood all the pressures that were on him. And so that really, I think that made me a better military spouse than some. Maybe not. I don't know.
I was waiting for an adjective of, like, some other spouses. Now, also being the mother of a service member, what's that like? Or
Excruciating.
do we need to step back and get into your story a little bit more before you can answer that one?
No, it's excruciating to be a military parent, especially mom, because you know what they're going to go through. Oh, my husband, I can replace a spouse. I can't have any more kids. And he's like, geez, thanks. And I'm like, no, think about it. I can always get married again if I want. I can't have any more kids. So if something were to happen to my kids and they didn't come home, that's a huge loss. Now, mind you, if I lost my husband, I would be devastated. Let's not get that wrong.
Right.
But it's very different when that's your child, you know, your flesh and blood. And you either you understand what they're going through. Like from boot camp, the first time she joined the Marine Corps, and I hear the drill just grounding on her, and I'm like, are you okay? And the drill said, don't you answer that. And I hung up the phone and I started crying. I was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I got her in trouble, you know? And so it's very different being the parent than the service member or the spouse. So it's definitely, you know, every role I've played in, though, I truly believe we all serve our country in different ways, either as the brat. I don't think that's very politically correct anymore. As the military child, as the veteran, you know, as the military parent, but they all play a specific role in order to be that force multiplier that we need.
Man, really, you just like had to do a bombshell on that. Like, everything has to be politically correct, you know? I mean, and I know you're just, you know, you're it's this is just us, right? And whoever listens to it, but like, that is unfortunate. I mean, when you say military brat, everybody knows you're not calling the person a brat and that you're not, but it just, oh God, gosh, that's why I just love
And I'm
politics.
like the worst politically correct person. And now that you know my resume, you probably think that's funny, but
I
not very good
do.
at it. But it's your podcast, so I thought it'd be nice.
Darn it. Nice people. But you know, so all right, you brought it up. So since I brought it up, I'm gonna say something. So it's your fault. Don't get mad. People can look at your resume too. so for the people who are listening, usually when I do a podcast, I will and this is kind of a good like thing for this episode anyway. Generally, when I ask somebody about being on the podcast, I've read up on the person. I like what I see. I connect with them and then say, hey, you know, let's talk about you being on the podcast. But this relationship actually ended up being starting off, and it is just starting off, but in a different manner. You've probably heard Cheryl Mason was on this podcast twice, once where she shared her story, and then September is Suicide Awareness Month, and she shared about her experience as it relates to suicide and having two members of her family die by way of suicide. And so she shared that in a book that she has written that's going to be coming out at some pretty soon here in 2024. But at some point in time after we had published her episode, her second episode, she said, hey, I want to put you in contact with this person. I'm going to connect y'all on LinkedIn and share y'all's phone numbers. And she didn't say anything else. So I had no idea what kind of connection this relationship was going to be, but it Cheryl Mason, I trusted her enough to know that if she's going to recommend somebody for me to connect to, I better do it. And I did. Well, wow, I love your facial expression. I mean, she's one of those, I think she's one of those people that is a very good networker. And so if she says, hey, I think you should connect with this person, there's probably something there. So we connected.
Amazing.
Okay, sorry, I didn't. Yeah, she is amazing. She's one of those people I will talk up until I can't talk anymore. Because I mean, I just think she's great. I love it when you have people like her who like are passionate about things and has a heart for people and helping people, and oh, by the way, happens to be accomplished as well. Here enters Shannon. Speaking of which, takes one to know one, then they know each other. So Shannon, it wasn't until Shannon and I talked on the phone or had a Zoom conversation, and I was like, awesome, so let's record. We set a date and time to record, and then I start reading about her. Dear God, let me tell you about this woman. No, I can't tell you all about her because like you probably need to hear from her more than me. But you know what I found out about this woman? Okay, I already knew. She's the president and founder of Shield of Sisters, and that's an amazing organization that she will talk about in a bit. But did you know? Of course you didn't, because I didn't. She was the mayor. I don't know the name of the town. I read it, but she was a mayor. Now, like, I know she did a lot of stuff advocating for military women and things with Congress, but I didn't know there was also a mayorship that was existed too.
Mayorship.
I know I'm making words up, like, however you call it. She was a mayor. How about
There you
that?
go.
So, what's up with that? Like, what prompted you to even do that? Who does that kind of stuff?
So it kind of started after I got my bachelor's degree from University of South Carolina. We moved to Hawaii. We got stationed out there, and I started working at the state Senate as a legislative analyst. And after that, we moved to Hawaii, or sorry, California, and I ran for office there. You didn't catch that one, did you? Ran for office there and won and became the mayor of a town in California. And then after our time in California, we moved to Wisconsin and I became a mayor of that town as well. So I've actually been a mayor twice
Oh, she's pulling.
of
She's
two
not
different cities.
pulling out those punches.
I guess it just kind of, there's a little bit of political backstory in my family. I've always been interested in it. And it just kind of happened, just right place, right to tell, and right motives, it's not for the weak. It's a hard job because it's thankless. There's not a lot of money in it. I don't know anyone who goes into politics for money. But it's also very rewarding, and it just kind of happened. I can't really like pinpoint a certain thing that happened. It just did, and I love it. I would never run again, but I love, the whole political.
So do you think that you said you had good intentions or a good motive? What was that? Was it military related, like advocating for military stuff, or what was that motivation to do that?
Originally the first city was because they wanted to incorporate based on a utility tax that they could never actually tell us how much it was going to be. So they were going to tax you on a like crazy level, but they couldn't tell you how to tax it. And I was like, well, that's stupid. So that was my platform there. And in here in Wisconsin, it was just kind of going up against the good old boy network. It was just constantly the same few men. And I'm like, that's stupid. And so little old white girl from the South decided to come up here and run for office. Matter of fact, I got called a carpetbagger. And I'm like, that's not how that works, but okay. And lost the first time I ran and won the second time pretty soundly. The first time I lost by 3 votes, which was killer. I'd rather be just beaten hard than,
Than
three
hardly
votes.
beaten. Wow. Well, and so that's true. I don't think a lot of people realize that. I have a family member that was in politics, and it really was a part-time job. And I think people don't realize that. You don't go into it for the pay. Now, someone might say, well, Congress, that's a different story. Well, okay,
Local
it is a different
politics.
story. One thing that I think I can mirror is, like, for the state legislature, at least in South Carolina, January to June, guess what? And Congress, January to June. But the pay is on a whole different scale, and there's so much more involved.
Oh,
But still, so I think a lot of people don't realize that. They think you ran for office, you're a mayor, you're a senator, you're a whatever, and well, you got it made financially. You're fine. No, not necessarily.
not at all.
But that so you did the mayor, you did that the second time you were a mayor in Wisconsin. What did you want to continue it to run again, Or did you say, okay, I've had my experience here, I've made my impact, I'm done with it?
I did decide to run again after my term. There was a lot of backdoor politics things going on, and decided that I was not going to be part of it. And actually, for a job in Alaska, and went out to Alaska for by myself for a year out in a fishing village, and ran a city out there for a year by myself. So,
Ran a city by yourself. Hold on, is that like being a mayor again?
kind of, it's a city administrative position. But out on the Bering Sea in Alaska, I went for a year by myself and just kind of got away from everything.
Oh my gosh. So let me ask you something. I just need to brace myself. I thought I knew what this conversation was going to be about, but is it going to be about that plus, oh, by the way, I did this and did that, and all these
No,
accolades are going to come out?
I think I'm done now. I think I'm good.
Yeah, forget about Shield Assistant. I mean, that's nothing. I'm kidding. So kidding. Yeah, wow, that's kind of special. Not you, me. Not you. I mean, you're special too, but that's not okay. Shut up. Scratch. Run
Next question.
that out. Next. So, to the part that I thought most of this conversation was going to be about, which is also, I think, the reason why we got connected with each other. We had, I don't like saying it was a similar experience, because each situation is so completely different, and that it's never good to say, oh yeah, I have a story like that, because our stories are very different. But it's still the same. I think the common bond is, trying to think of the right word. Like, you, when you get violated, or you get mistreated, and not just mistreated, but by anybody, but by somebody who wears the same uniform as you do, I think that makes it even more difficult, because when you go into the military, you go in with this, these are my brothers, these are my sisters, we're a family here, we're a tight-knit group, we have each other's back. I mean, even to the point where the public will say, well, I thought Navy and Army, they hated each other. No, we just hate each other during one game, one football game. But we don't
Which
hate
we're not
each
going
other.
to discuss.
Well, we can this year and last year.
No,
Oh,
we're not going to
wow.
discuss that.
Sore losers. No, I'm kidding.
No.
But I mean, like, so, in a lot of times, people outside of the military will say one of two extremes. Either y'all are such a tight-knit group and y'all don't hate anybody, or they'll say, well, the branch, y'all are tight-knit groups within your branch, but the branches, y'all just are at odds with each other. Y'all hate each other. And it's just not the case. We don't. We are a team. It's like siblings. You might fight with your siblings, but at the end of the day, the minute somebody else comes in and says, well, I'm going to mess with Shannon, guess what? Tiffany's jumping in and saying, no, you're
Oh
not.
yeah. Yeah.
So
It's we're allowed to fight, but you're not allowed to do that too.
you were not invited. You were not
This is
invited to
our
this
fight.
quarrel. So I think that's why, I think that's because of the tight-knitness of the group, of the military environment. Getting hurt by somebody that's in the family, the military family, is makes the hurt makes the pain of the hurt even worse.
Yeah, the
And
betrayal
so,
is more significant.
yeah, absolutely. So I would love it if you could share some of that.
Okay. Like I said, I joined the Navy in 1992. I was 18 years old. I actually joined when I was 17, but had to do the delayed entry to finish high school. So 2 weeks after I graduated high school, I went in the Navy, went down to Orlando for boot camp in June and July, which was miserable. Went to my A school, everything was great. Loved what I was doing, loved the camaraderie, and was living what I had been raised to believe the military was, that big happy family. We take care of each other. I've always got your six. I got to my first duty station in Norfolk, and being 18, sassy, in shape. There was never a shortage of being asked out on dates, and accepted a date with a fellow sailor. It's actually a military police officer, shore patrol, and didn't really pay attention to his rank or anything. Didn't know that was a problem. And after a couple dates, he started using his rank as a way to coerce me into a relationship, and it went further into, if you don't have sex with me, if you don't keep dating me, I'm going to tell your command. And because I had such a high security clearance, they held that you have a high security clearance. Anytime that was threatened, you did what you were told because you didn't want to lose that clearance. And so it turned into a very vicious cycle of abuse, of, coercion. And so, after about the fifth time of being assaulted, my roommate actually walked into the house, into the barracks, and caught us. And it was actually a good thing because she was actually dating a fellow military police officer, and went and told him what she found, and barracks room and got me. And they said, "We really need to talk to you," and went to the police station. My chief was there, which is very awkward, the male chief, and told me that I had been assaulted by someone with HIV. And back in those days, everybody was really scared of HIV and AIDS because, we're in the 90s, fresh out of the 80s, where all of it was starting to really get extreme, and a lot of information on it. And he was only there because of that diagnosis. And so got tested a lot. a lot of exams, a lot of blood work. Never allowed to go to counseling because I had such a high security clearance. He went to jail. Apparently he was married. So, you were talking about that whole adultery thing. You can go to jail in the military for adultery. And he got 6 months in a break for adultery, not for what he did to me, not because of his health, but because he was married. And so, that betrayal, one of such a deadly, could be a deadly disease of being married, because I grew up in a very religious home and did not believe in adultery. And just a betrayal of a brother, it was catastrophic to me. I spent the next 30 years really pushing it to the back of my mind, but the whole time I would, drink, I would do other things. We're not going to go into all of my misgivings. On the outside, I look mayor, congressional staffer, lobbyist, all these things, colonel's wife. But it took a really long time to realize that what the assault and all of that went with it was really doing to me was destroying me. And so finally, I was working for a congressman here in Wisconsin, and I was his field representative and military liaison. And I had four different women come to me and tell me what had happened to them and that they needed help. And so I created Shield of Sisters because I felt like, if, I thought I was the only one for a long time, and realized that I was not alone, but that there still needed a lot to be done. And there still needed a lot of help, both emotionally on my own and for all my sisters who have suffered what they call military sexual trauma. And, like you said, there's a big umbrella. There's this umbrella is called MST, military sexual trauma. It can be a lot of different things. And so, no matter what category of MST you have, it's still that betrayal. We raise our hand to protect and defend, and we're not protected and defended. And so I created Shield of Sisters to really from what had happened. And it wasn't until I did my own retreat that I really found a new way to look at everything, find my healing. So.
Yeah. I even though we already talked about this, I just like hearing it even though I'm hearing it again, it's like hearing it for the first time, because it just, it really blows my mind that this kind of thing actually happens. I mean, it shouldn't happen in or out of the military. It shouldn't ever happen. There's no, like, there's no kind of justification for it. It just, it seems, it's, and I don't know, I don't have, and I hope I never have it, have anything to compare it to, you know, but it's just, there's something about that family. And I, like, I would imagine even with any kind of like incest is different than, is there a, I don't know if I can use the word regular, but like a regular rape, and there's nothing regular about it, but it being somebody else. And so I almost equate it to that, because it's just all kinds of wrong. I don't know. It's just all kinds of wrong. I, there's, it's, just, there's nothing else.
There's
to say.
No words. There's no word. It's just all kinds of wrong. You're right. It's,
I mean, you see, I'm like searching for something to call it, but there's just like, there's, it's just all kinds of wrong. There is no,
it's at one of its highest forms.
And, you know, I will tell you, this is what got me the most. And I think I shared this with you. I mean, this is not to today. This is not about me sharing my story, but I do want to share this, this piece. The thing that got me the most, it's been almost 7 years since it happened for me. And it was just 2 years, maybe, or three, or two and a half, somewhere around the 2 year mark before I was retiring that it happened for me. And I know this, this lingo is not familiar unless you've served in the Army Reserves, but there is a form called a 1380. And this form is basically something that is filled out when you have something, something medically that happens to you, whether it's an illness or an injury, that, that you fill it out, and you're, with your doctor's information on there, and somebody that's a, an 04 or above in your chain of command signs off on it saying, yes, this did happen while this service member was in the service. So that way, when you go to the VA and you file your VA claim, unlike active duty, you're really only concerned about taking your medical records to the VA, and that's all that there is. But your medical records in the reserves or National Guard is a whole lot thinner than that of an active duty service member, just because you're, in essence, a part-time military person. So I, you know, a couple months before I retired, I had worked my way up the chain of command to where I made it to the top guy, the chief Army Reserve Surgeon, Surgeon General, and said, hey, look, I just want this form. That's all I'm asking for. And there was no budging. There was no willingness to provide the form. And the response that I got, you will not, I'm glad you're sitting down, you will not believe what he said. If we, for me, my incident happened on a Tuesday. My duty, my closest duty to that time period was Friday. So from Friday morning to Monday evening, and it happened, my incident happened on Tuesday afternoon. So the Army's view of it is it did not happen on a duty day. So the question that I asked the Surgeon General when he told me that, if we, well, he said to me before I even, he said to me, if we funded every injury or illness, cold or sprained ankle of a service member that happened off duty, then we'd be broke. And I very matter-of-factly said, sir, the Army Reserves is already broke. You will never be out of debt. And this is not a sprained ankle. This is not, I was outside going on a run and twisted my ankle. I didn't go outside in the winter without my coat on and get the flu. Another individual took it upon themselves to have their way with me. I didn't do anything to deserve that. And in the military, we say that there's a couple of things that we have zero tolerance for: sexual assault and drinking and driving. So let me ask you this, sir. The very day, that very Tuesday that I experienced this, let's suppose that I was so distraught, which I was so up, my emotions were just all over the place. I was distraught and I decided I'm going to go to the bar. I'm going to drink. I'm going to get drunk and then drive myself home. And before I make it home, I get pulled over and I get ticketed and get a DUI because I was drinking and driving. Now, how much you want to bet, sir, that I would lose rank or get kicked out of the military because I was drinking and driving on a non-duty day, but yet that same very day, I was raped by a service member and I get no kind of recognition or yes, it happened. What's the catch 22 here? And so I think a lot of times when people hear me share my story, you share your story and anybody else who shares their story, I think a couple of things happen. One, you have the one demographic. I'm not going to join the military because I don't want to be set up to be in a situation like that. Or it's already happened to me in the service and I'm afraid to say anything to anybody because if I do, there's going to be a lot of repercussions and it's just not going to be worth me sharing my story or getting the help that I deserve because this is what's going to happen.
Yeah,
I mean, you went how long without talking about it because of that? Or didn't get the immediate help because I was going to lose my clearance?
Yeah. Yeah, 30 years. But you know what's great is late last year, 23, seems like just yesterday, they actually passed and created an investigative board now. So you no longer have to go to your command. So I think for a while, we're going to see numbers actually go up. It's not going to be just one in three like it is right now. I think it's going to be more significant because more and more people are going to feel comfortable enough to go to that investigative board and ask for help than they were their commander, their first sergeant, whoever. So I'm encouraged by that. But it also doesn't help all the women who haven't reported because of that. So I don't know. It's so hard to go to someone and tell them, and one, you're not believed. Two, it's not a significant issue. And your assaulter gets, you know, a smack on the hand, if that. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I really am pushing in a lot of my conversations for those changes. You know, let's prosecute these perpetrators like the civilians do. You know, if my perpetrator had been a civilian and he had gotten caught, he would have gotten attempted murder because it's considered attempted murder to rape someone or have sex with someone without telling them your health conditions, especially something like HIV. So, you know, we've come so far, but we still have so far to go. And even if there was never another assault in the military, we still have thousands and thousands of women and more common now men who have been assaulted and have never had help or done anything about it. And I think it's tragic because living in that secret is horrific. You always have to keep that little bubble closed. And when you finally release it, there's so many emotions and feelings and it's hard to deal with them all at once. That, like, you know, it just like a bubble burst. And, you know, after 30 years, it was hard. It was hard for me. And, you know, I still get angry. I still cry. But I found a way to help. And so I'm sharing that with others.
You know, right. So a couple things. Crud. You went 30 years. I went a week and a half. I cannot imagine what that was like. Because for me, I finally had gone somewhere and I journaled. And when I journaled it, like I started to get emotional. Because up until that moment in which I was journaling, it was something happened and I don't know what to make of it, but writing it out, journaling made me slow my thoughts down and do some processing. And then it was oh crud, this is what actually just happened to me. So the next day, I ended up going to the VA emergency room. And the only reason that's where I went is because a lady that I went to church with, whom I knew, I loved, I trusted, she was like a mother to me, because of that relationship that already existed and she was working that day, I could go to her. But had she not worked there, I don't know how much longer I would have gone without reporting it.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I arrived to the ER, because I had called her and said, I need you to triage me. And she asked what's going on. I said, I didn't even have the guts to say anything yet, or not guts, but like, I didn't have the courage to say anything yet. And so I arrived at the hospital and she pulled me into the triage room and she's like, hey, what's going on, baby? And then I bawled just a floodgate of tears and could barely get the words out. But I told her what happened and she gave me a hug because she knew that's what I needed.
Yeah.
But had it been somebody else, I just don't know. And so with that, I guess like the question that like, and I don't have an answer and you probably don't either, or maybe you do, but like, whether it's a week and a half, like it was for me, or 3 decades, like it was for you, like, how do we encourage people to say, hey, look, you weren't meant to, one, you weren't meant to deal with this, but you weren't, definitely it happened. You weren't meant to deal with it alone. Like, how do you encourage people to talk about it? Because not only is it something that happened, it's very intimate, it's very personal. And there's a lot of, I don't think that there's anybody who's experienced any kind of sexual assault that didn't have any shame accompanied with it.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So like, how do you encourage somebody to say, hey, you know what? You didn't cause it. You need to talk to somebody. How do you do that?
I think you have to find someone you trust. You know, being told what happened to me by a police officer in front of my chief was horrific. One, there was shame and embarrassment. You know, here I am, 18 years old, in front of all the guys. And so I really think you have to find that person that you can really trust and say, this is what happened to me. And I need your help to tell whoever needs to be told, whether it happened today or 30 years ago. You know, mind you, there's, you know, statute of limitations or whatever. You still have things that need to heal. And you really need to be able to tell someone you can trust. And I did that. I went to someone I trusted tremendously.
Mm-hmm.
And besides, you know, hearing it from my command, because I knew there would be no judgment. And I really think you have to find that person. But I encourage people to tell their story and what happened, because that's the only thing that's going to keep you from not healing, is not telling, I think. You know, at Shield of Sisters, when we do our workshops, we don't have the women tell their stories because we all have a similar story. We're all women veterans. We've all had a sexual assault or sexual trauma. Need the nitty gritty details. I tell mine because I want them to understand that I know, you know, I know what it's like. I've been in the worst, you know, I mean, there's more worse stories than mine, but I've been in some of the pretty bad stuff from it. But to just tell someone your story and have them know, either some counseling, take you to get legal help, you know, medical help, whatever, is so important to that healing.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, tell your story.
Yeah. Here I am. For a second, I like forgot that we were recording because I'm just like so there with you. I mean, yeah, I mean, because it, like, man, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, it's just hard.
It has worked for me, and how I was before I told my story and how I am now are two different people.
Yeah.
And, you know, when we were talking originally and you said you were going to name this, you can go now. If you want, I can go into that and why it helped me.
Yeah.
So when I went to I talked to a friend of mine about Shield of Sisters. I said, I want to create a nonprofit, and this is what I wanted to do. And he's like, I have something for you. I want you to collect a couple women, and we're going to do this retreat together. And it's a restoration workshop, retreat, whatever you want to call it. And during the retreat, he told this story. He was over in Afghanistan on a helicopter, and he was on the chopper, and they were with a team, and they were taking out a high profile target that day, and they accomplished their mission. And the pilot just he kept circling the field, circling the field. And finally somebody's like, hey, we're running out of gas, bud. We gotta go. Mission accomplished. And he just couldn't. And he kept circling and circling. And they got down to where, hey, this we're gonna crash, and this is gonna turn into something different. You can go now. Mission accomplished. And it really resonated with me, just those words, you can go now. And I really, in my brain, and I started crying in my brain. I didn't have to live in my trauma anymore. I didn't have to live in the suicide attempts, alcohol, everything else I used to medicate. I didn't have to live in that anymore. I could go now. And it seems so simple, Native with me, and it gave me that I'll never be 18 again. I'll never get those years back, but I can live the rest of my life, and I can live it in a way that helps others not go through 30 years of hell, somebody's life. And so it was just really impactful. And it's this year I'm turning 50. I'm really excited. I tell everybody I'm turning 50. I'm so excited because my 50th year is going to be my best year. I'm not living in that trauma. I'm not living in not wanting to be alive. I'm very excited about this next decade or so, just that phrase, you can go now, was just impactful for me. And this person will forever be in my heart from that story, and gifting me the program that he wrote for Shield of Sisters. And I just believe it's powerful.
And on that note, I'm gonna go now. Okay. I'm kidding. No, I mean, I think only one other time on recording an episode for the podcast have I ever felt like this. Somebody else, somebody shared their story, completely different story. But in the midst of her sharing her story, there was a point where it was like, okay, it's on me now. I gotta ask another question. But I was like, and I told her when we were recording, I was like, yeah, I'm so undone right now. I've got
I'm
nothing to
sorry.
no, no and that's kind of like how I'm feeling right now, because like it's just, and this is why I even started it off with, yeah, there's a little bit of a similarity in our story, in that we both had a sexual assault while in the military. But the differences in our story are different. I mean, the similarity is we were in uniform, and so was the perpetrator, and it was somebody that we knew. But but then our stories are different too, and I think that I hope that that can be encouragement for anybody that's listening too, is that whether even the, because there's the commonality. Even though there was only like a week and a half that went by versus 30 years, it was still a very hard thing for me to do. To say it for the first time was very difficult. And it helped because, like you said, I went to somebody that I knew, that I trusted. Like, yes, I felt shame because of what happened, but she was the person that I could take my shame to and talk to about it. And so I agree with you on that, that it is important. And I also, like you said too, I really do think it's important that no matter, and even, yeah, I'll even take a step further back in it. Even if it was, I don't want to say it was just, because just is not a word that belongs in any of this. So I'll say, even if the sexual assault was somebody just touched me. And again, I don't mean just. I hate saying that word because it's not wrong is wrong.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So whether somebody undressed you by looking you up and down, physically touched you, had sex with you, did anything sexually that was unwelcomed and unwanted, that is a sexual assault.
Mm-hmm.
Sexual assault is when something sexually happens and you didn't want it to happen.
Mm-hmm.
That is like the best definition of sexual assault. It's not, oh, well, this happened and then that happened and then this other thing happened. So it must, no. If anything unwelcomed, unwanted, unsolicited, whatever words you want to put there, and it was sexual in nature, it was a sexual assault.
Yep.
And it is not okay for something like that to happen.
Yeah. And, you know, I joined when Tailhook was going on, you know, the big TV. And so we were constantly in sexual harassment classes and sexual assault classes. And so I was like, oh, we're safe. You know, we're brothers and sisters. And I don't know if it would have been worse on the civilian side. I can't say that.
Right.
But to constantly be told, one, medically, we're all very clean, you know, all the testing and shots and boot camp craziness. It blows your mind that it happens. So, and I apologize. I have to get a computer plug while we're doing this because my computer is wearing down.
Hey, look, the computer plug that self-delivers. That's a pretty awesome delivery system right there.
that's a Navy brat right there, Army brat. So,
oh, dear God. There's one in every family.
Three in ours, but, you know. So sorry about that. I didn't want the computer to die while we were talking.
I am glad it didn't. I would have really felt rejected. Shannon, this is the part of the podcast or doing a podcast that I hate to love and love to hate. I mean, just the emotions that come with it, because unfortunately it's real. It unfortunately happens. And unfortunately, we are just two of countless other people that have experienced it. And the thing, I'll tell you the two things that really bother me. I don't want to say bother me. When we talk about statistics, the two topics that I think we'll never have an accurate number on is sexual assault and suicide.
Mm-hmm.
Those two numbers, I think we try to produce as many numbers as we can, but there's really just no way. And here's why. Well, because with suicide, when somebody dies by way of suicide, let's say that the method of dying by suicide was, I'm going to go drive my car off a cliff. Well, at the end of the day, when all reports have been done, is it going to be that the person died by suicide or it was a fatal accident?
Right.
When somebody experiences an MST and it's very traumatic, but it goes unreported, then we don't have that number to bring into the fold of here's how many that actually did happen. And both categories of things are things that need to be addressed, need to be improved upon. And when I say improved upon, I don't mean by increasing the numbers, but I mean by decreasing the numbers that that these things happen. But we can't say, oh yeah, suicide is better in the military because we have this many cases. But what about the unreported ones? Or what about the unreported MSTs? And say, yes, we have a better grasp on MST because last year we had X number that happened. But this year, we only had this number of people that reported sexual assault. Well, the key word is reported, not actually occurred, because I wasn't going to report it.
No.
I wasn't even going to go to the VA, but it was because I had that friend that worked in the VA that I was able to start the process going of getting the help that I needed. You know, I like that mirror that you have in the background. So at least I could have seen you moving when you were not on screen. I could say, at least she's still there.
I am. Let me see. Sorry. You can cut this part, right?
Oh yeah.
Okay. I've got to get this isn't plugging in properly.
And I'm going to lose you, and that's not cool.
You will never lose me, my friend, because we are family. Oh, wait.
I think we're good. I think we're good.
Okay.
We
the little thing says family. The battery is good. Okay. No, yeah, I don't think, you know, there. What's that old saying? There's statistics and there's lies, or and then there's damn lies, something like that. I firmly believe the 22 a day is inaccurate. I firmly believe more than 1 in 3. And what they're constituting, what they used to constitute military sexual trauma as, and what they do it now, are different. So those numbers are wrong. I don't want numbers, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, does it help me with my nonprofit? Yeah. I mean, you know, I could say, hey, it's 1 in 3 women, and that gets donations and help and, you know, la-di-da. What I want is it to change, the system to change, the punishment to change, the fact that it even happens to change. You know, I want help for the suicide rates, because one is too many. And, you know, now they're saying, you know, if somebody overdoses, it's not really a suicide. They just, it's an overdose. And I think really the number is higher because they don't necessarily count women as the same as they do men with suicide. So there's just so many things that go into that. So I just hate numbers. I just,
yeah.
To me, it yeah, it's great for data, but yeah.
Yeah, I feel the same way, even for numbers for listening to a podcast. I'm like, I only, and I shared this with somebody a couple of days ago, I only want more numbers for the podcast because I want the podcast to reach more people.
Yeah. That's Whereas, a different number.
Yeah, but but other people want more numbers on a podcast to see if it's, to deem whether it's worthy enough to listen to.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, out of all the people that I've had on the podcast, I've only had 2 people tell me no. And it's because my numbers weren't good enough to make it worth their time. There wasn't a good enough ROI for them. And
you got to start somewhere.
You know, but I want more numbers because I want it to have a greater reach.
Mm-hmm. So
that one person, well, I was going to say because of that one person in that small little town in Wisconsin, but I can't do that right now because I'm talking to you. Because you were probably the mayor of that little town or something. But I mean,
you're like, you know, Montana.
Okay, yeah. Not Mount St. Helen, but like whatever other little town there is in Montana. And I'm not talking about Joe either, you know, him and Joe Montana. But like, okay, let me stop. Let me quit getting cheesy. But I mean, and so I'll even tell you this. I had 2 people say no, but I know this has nothing to do with your episode, but I might cut it out too. But like, even I went, so I did a series about 1.5 years ago of it was called Take a Knee with Tiffany. And 12 people, 12 veterans shared their story as it related to mental health and suicide, mental health, suicide, and addictions. Mm-hmm. Because those were 3 areas that I think really need to be addressed in the military and veteran community.
Mm-hmm.
And so we did that, and I had gone to my local VA. So forget where I told you that I live, Charleston, South Carolina. wait, let me stop that. But I mean, so I went to the VA, and I went to the public affairs office, and I said, "Hey, you need to put that tissue down because it's bugging the crap out of me." I'm kidding. Oh, no, I'm kidding. I'm sorry, Shannon. I'm kidding. I didn't mean that. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
Tearing up. It's such a hard topic.
I know. That's why I said I'm kidding. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have said that.
You're fine.
You know what I need to do? All right. Tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to send this clip to Kleenex and say, you need to sponsor me and here's why.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
You hey, and the hey. Other episode too. So I am going to cut this part out. The other person's story, you may have heard of her. You've heard of her. Now I got to think of her name. God, why? Jessica. Crap. All right. Anyway, she was. Why? Come on. Last name. What? Jessica. Hello. Come on. This is. All right. Anyway, she was a Jessica Buchanan. She was a not missionary, but what do you call them? She went to Africa to teach African kids how to, you know, avoid any landmines or bombs or whatever.
Okay.
She was kidnapped and held hostage for 90 days, and the Navy SEALs had gone and rescued her. 93 days to be exact. And so, and when she came back, obviously there's trauma there, right? When she came back, one of the things that she, one, hearing her story is like, how do you even respond to that? Like,
yeah,
it's just, it was awful. But then one of the things that was even more difficult that I know I could empathize with, and you could too, is that she goes to get help and get the mental health counseling. And she had seen so many psychologists and psychiatrists who would tell her, that's a very traumatic event, and I'm not even trained to handle something like that. Because if you're held hostage for 93 days in a foreign country, and it took the Navy SEALs to bring you home, I mean, like, you're not trained and equipped enough to deal with something like that, because it doesn't happen frequently.
Yeah.
So anyway.
And, you know, talking about not being trained, I never badmouth the military or the VA.
Mm-hmm.
I've had some great experiences, and then I've had some not so great experiences. Mm-hmm. The trauma counseling that they do
mm-hmm.
is amazing for combat.
Mm-hmm.
Not so much for the trauma that we've experienced,
yeah.
In my opinion.
Yes.
I'll say in my opinion. And so I really think that when we go to the VA for help, or we go to other organizations for help, it needs to be trauma specific, mm-hmm. because what helps a Navy SEAL get over something, what helps Jessica get over something, and what helps like someone like me get over something, mm-hmm. are probably going to be very different. So mm-hmm. I really think, when people are seeking that counseling, they need to be very careful and make sure that it's something that's going to heal them.
Mm-hmm.
With their specific situation. I can't imagine 93 days as a hostage, and
never
totally
slept.
Different trauma than yeah. what I experienced.
I mean, she never slept in a bed. She was never inside anything. There was never a roof over her head. If she had to go to the bathroom, it was go pee behind the bush.
Mm-hmm.
So you're 93 days out in the elements. And so, yes, that was definitely... I mean, there's nothing else to really compare to that. But no, I will say, and I feel the same way. Yes, I have shared a lot of negative experiences that I had in the military and at the VA, but I don't trash talk it either, because 24 years of service was not 24 bad years of life. I mean, I had good experiences. I mm-hmm. had not so good experiences, and same with the VA, And like, I'm glad you said that about the care, the type of care. For me, when I was trying to get care for it, I will say, no, that's a whole nother animal. I don't want to even have a squirrel moment with that. But like, for me, I had to, it was hard for me to get into counseling, but well, no, let me backtrack. It wasn't as difficult to get into counseling, but it was getting the right counseling that was hard. So it was easy for them to say, okay, we're going to do CBT, which is the cognitive behavioral therapy, talk therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I was put into. Now, I had multiple issues that I was dealing with. I had major depression, generalized anxiety, And it was chronic major depressive disorder. And then, oh, by the way, I had this MST. So when I set, I went to these talk therapy sessions with a psychologist, and I finally just said, look, I don't feel, because every day I'd go in, she'd be like, hey, how are you doing? So what do you want to talk about today? Which, okay, fine, if we're just doing talk therapy, sure. But when you need help, like I needed help, just coming in and talking about whatever I wanted to talk about that day was not what I needed.
Right.
And so I finally vocalized that to her. I said, hey, look, I've been trying to see what if this was going to work, but it's not. And she said, well, what do you mean it's not working? I said, okay, major depression, generalized anxiety, and then PTSD from a sexual assault. Those are all big deals by themselves. I don't know what I want to talk about today. I don't ever know what I want to talk about each day that I come in here. I
Right.
mean, because I'm a talker, I can talk to anybody about anything. I said, but so I envision this relationship as me being the one that has an issue, has several issues, and you being the mental health provider that can help me function, get through these issues so I can better function as a person. And so that's what I want to talk about, but I don't know which one I want to talk about first. I don't know how to navigate any of these things. I need you to tell me how to navigate these things because you are the one that went to school for so many years. And so, I mean, that really, and I mean, yeah, it's kind of funny, like the way I was talking, or when I retell how I was talking or how we were talking to each other,
But it's not.
but I was very serious. It was very real. And so that session, that's all we talked about. Our next appointment was 2 weeks later. Came in. We were walking down the hall to her office. Hey, Tiffany, how you doing? How are you doing? How has your past week or two been? Great. We sit down. Sue, what do you want to talk about today? And I looked at her, and I didn't say anything. And then she looked up at me. Anything? What do you want to talk about today? I'm like, were you here 2 weeks ago? I didn't say it really clearly or loudly enough for her to hear. And she goes, what? I said, rephrase. Do you remember what we talked about last time? And she's looking back at her notes. She flipped back to look at her notes. Oh, yeah. So you want to jump on the depression first or the anxiety first? Like what? And I looked at her, I'm like, and I kind of chuckled. And I'm like, and that chuckle was for me to stop from crying. Because I just, I mean, it really was. The laugh was like to be like, okay, before I have a water flood or waterfall flood down my face, like, or no, that's your thing. You're gonna tell me what we're gonna talk about today, remember? And we kind of talked about it again. So we blew two sessions, and I came for the third time. And then that's when I realized, I said, okay, I need you to help me. I'm going to tell you what I want to talk about today. I need you to help me either find a different type of care that you're going to provide for me, or a different person that's going to do it, because this is not working. I said, I'm sure you are an outstanding clinical psychologist, but what I personally need is something where I'm not going to come in and tell you what I want to talk about every day. I don't know what I want to talk about. I just know I need to get better.
Yeah, absolutely.
So for me, I think I was lucky. I mean, not because of that part, but I was able to vocalize, hey, doc, I tried you out. I gave you some time because I think that's important too. I think we do need to give them a chance, because it might take a couple sessions to feel like whether or not you're in sync or not. And that just me and that doctor were just not in sync. So I got referred to I guess they had a PTSD section within mental health. And in that set, and so I was able to go to that section. They do CPT, which is the cognitive processing therapy, and did that. And here's where I think I was lucky. That was what I need. That was the type of therapy I needed. And boy, did I get the right therapist. This
That's
woman,
awesome.
yeah, she could dish it out and she could take it. So I could be myself and dish it out to her and her be
Yeah.
like, yeah, really? Okay. And it's because of her that I started a podcast.
You have to be your own advocate in many instances. Like, I kept asking for a female counselor, and he said I was very guarded in my conversation. I'm like, well, don't really trust men, you know, not all men, but in general, especially if they're in uniform. And I would just encourage anyone that's listening, be your own advocate, demand what you need. Like you're saying, you know, I don't want to tell you what I need to talk about today. I want you to tell me what I need to do. You know, I don't want to talk to a man about this. I want to talk to a woman about this, or vice versa. To be your own advocate and be your own strong advocate and really fight for what you need to get better.
You know what? So here's the thing with that. That's hard to do. Yes, I did it. Yes, you did it. But here's what I'm reminded of. And I think I may have mentioned this to you when you and I were talking previously. I don't remember. But there was a TikTok video that went viral of a Navy veteran who had gone into the VA for mental health counseling. And he came out, and this video was him sitting in his car crying because he was frustrated because he felt like he was as bad off, if not worse, than when he showed up for his mental health appointment. And again, this isn't me bad mouthing the VA. This is me talking about a veteran who didn't feel like he was getting the help that he needed. And he felt like he was taking your advice of going to get help and trying. But he may have even posed the question. I don't remember, but it was, you could tell that there was that hopelessness of, why do I need to keep on trying to get the help that I need? I already acknowledged that I needed help. I've already tried to go get help. I'm not getting that help. Like, how much am I supposed to endure before I get the accurate help that I need? And I don't have an answer for that. And because, like you said, and like I wholeheartedly agree, you've got to be able to advocate for yourself. But sometimes advocating on top of whatever your issue is can be so hard that it's like, why even advocate? So like, how do you do that? I don't know.
Well, if you can't do it yourself, and that's not uncommon because you're already dealing with other things. What we've done, especially at Shield of Sisters, is created what we call battle angels. You know, instead of a battle buddy, we have who we actually train to be in this situation. You know, like say I called you and said, you know what, I've been trying to advocate for myself. It's someone else to go and advocate for me, or just someone to talk to. You know, I was at the VA today. I had to tell my story for 100th time. You know, I'm tired of this. And it's just someone you can really lean on. You know, we're very big about your battle buddy having your six. And so you really need to find that battle who will have your you if you can't, or if you have tried, or it's just not in you right now. But also, you know, we need leaders to stand up and hold the VAs and the military hospitals accountable that aren't doing what they should do. And it's not all of them. But those that are, that have had, you know, Marines walk in and kill themselves in the middle of the hospital, or go back out to their car and kill themselves, or have, you know, a total meltdown, they need to be held responsible and they need to be held accountable for what they have not done or what they have done, but mostly what they have not done. But, you know, I'm a firm believer in our battle buddies, battle angels, whatever you want to call them, because I think, you know, when we're weak, we have someone behind us that's stronger and that'll help us. I'm a lady veteran. And it's funny.
I'm not a female. I'm a lady.
Yeah, I am. I'm a lady. For the longest time, I didn't even want to associate being a veteran. But, you know, I was a military spouse. I was a military dependent. And while I was in, it was hard enough to be a female sailor. My ship, my office was all males. I was constantly fighting to be part of the crew. No, I didn't want to be different. I didn't want to wear the skirt on, you know, while we were doing inspections. I didn't want a different amount of push-ups or whatever. But now there's this push that, hey, we're women veterans, we're women service members. We have this, we have our own Veterans Day now. And it took a really long time to want to identify as anything but a veteran, you know, and add that gender specific to it. It still sometimes bugs me, but for that lady veteran on it, it's kind of like sassy, you know, like, hey, I'm a lady veteran and I'm gonna do what I need to do. Yeah. Like that. Just snap when you do it. And it really has changed my outlook on it, because I just feel like, you know, our brothers get a lot of recognition and they get a lot of stuff through nonprofits and they get a lot of different care. Mind you, they do a lot of different things. So not grading my brothers, who love them. But when you throw that lady title on there, for me, it just adds a different level to it. And, you know, I call all the people who come to all the women who come to us, I call them lady veterans. And they're like, I'm like, no, you're a lady.
Can you imagine walking up into a chair, you got this long skirt on, and you grab your skirt as you sit down? I'm a lady veteran. As I sit down.
As I put my boots and jeans on. And
Yeah. So I'm still going to do a curtsy. I'm a lady.
Exactly.
With my torn up jeans and my jean jacket and whatever. Yeah. So if I'm listening to this episode and I want to, like, I might not be ready to go and report my MST or talk about it really, but you said I can come to a retreat and not talk about the details of my story and I need help. So what do I need to do to check you out and maybe come to one of your retreats?
Go to our website. It's www.shieldofsisters.org, all one word, Shield of Sisters. Or you can email me at shannon@shieldofsisters.org and we'll get you started. This year, we're looking at doing a very large conference/retreat for 100 plus women here in Wisconsin.
Wisconsin.
The Kentucky girls say in Wisconsin properly. we're really hoping that from that we'll be able to grow nationwide and not just stay in Wisconsin, because it's really, you know, you look at Fort Hood/Cavazos, you look at all the other places that are really in the news right now, because of MST. And I mean, there's other similar organizations out there, but we specifically deal with MST. A lot of them will deal with PTSD or combat related type things, but we focus solely on MST. That is all we deal with. There's things that come from MST, you know, suicide prevention, PTSD, things like that. But our sole focus is veterans, active duty, who have endured military sexual trauma. But that's how you find us. Our website, my cell phone is everywhere. I'll give you my number now. It's 608-344-0210. I've had women call me from Japan and tell me their stories, and I've sat and cried with them and talked to them. So it doesn't matter, you know. Yeah. That's why I'm here. I fully believe my sole purpose and passion in life is to do this and make it amazing.
You know what? I am so glad I drank water before talking to you, because I'd be a hot mess right now if I didn't. And all of that information will be in the show notes for people to catch. Awesome. And see. Wait, I didn't catch that number. Go look in the show notes.
it's on the website, or it's on LinkedIn. It's
like ragu sauce. It's in there.
Yeah. I figure once you've been in public office, your information's everywhere, so who cares?
Just, you know, help the public out. Just let me give it to you, all right?
Find me quicker.
hold on a second.
Thank you and have a nice day.